The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from Flatiron Books, publishers of Real Love, the new book from Sharon Salzberg. Learn to connect more deeply and redefine love with this creative toolkit of mindfulness exercises at SharonSalzberg.com.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today is author and journalist Catherine Jacobson Raymond. Her newest book, Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery, is based on both meticulous research and her personal quest for relief from chronic back pain. A review of the book appears in the May-June issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. Catherine Raymond, welcome to Essential Conversations.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm happy to have you here. I've got the book in front of me. I read much of it. I didn't finish all of it, but I read much of it. And this book, I have back pain. I always have. I've had problems with my back forever. I spend my life sitting on a very, an $89 chair from Office Depot. And it's probably, you're going to tell me, not the best thing to do. Mm-mm. So I want to ask you first, before we get into the whole back pain industry and stuff, how did humans get into this problem in the first place? How does sitting become the enemy of health?
Well, I often hear from people say to me, well, I know why we have back pain. And I'll say, well, why is that? And they say, well, we were never meant to walk on 2 feet. And I say, well, now let's just think about that, okay? Have you ever looked closely at how a chimpanzee walks? And they'll say, well, no, not really. And I say, well, basically, they list side to side like drunken sailors. That's the gait of a chimpanzee. And there's a little thing called evolution that has occurred in the course of millions and millions of years. And our bodies are very different than a chimpanzee's. We have developed gluteal muscles. Chimps do not really have them. They have something, but ours are massive swaths of muscles going, across the backside. We have a whole set of muscles in the thighs that chimps do not have. We are built very differently between the hip and the rib cage than a chimpanzee. And all in all, our entire physiology is extremely different than what you see in any kind of monkey. So, standing on 2 feet, yeah, that is what we are meant to do. Unfortunately, we are not meant to sit all the time. And that's our lives are very much about that. Most people's are. We've taken to saying, well, I go to the gym 3 times a week, I get 3 full hours of exercise, and that ought to do it. But unfortunately, from a physiological perspective, that still doesn't do it. Our sedentary lifestyles are really causing us a lot of grief. And it's not just back pain problems. There are metabolic problems that come along with that. And of course, obesity, but also diabetes, heart disease, you name it. And we've just, somewhere along the line, it became a very estimable thing to spend hours and hours and hours at your desk, not standing up. I mean, think about it. We say, I had lunch at my desk. Well, what does that mean? That means you are virtuous in the extreme, right? So we lost the notion that it was very important to get up and move very often and not be stuck in a static position. You know how your chair puts you in sort of a 90-90-90 position in terms of the angles of your knees to your hips to your shoulders, etc., to your elbows. And that is a position that most of us understand to be very beneficial. That's the goal. Well, that's just plain wrong. That position that we all learn to assume while sitting in a chair, that position was developed to allow typists in the 1940s to slam their hands on the keys for hours and end without becoming entirely exhausted. But it really has nothing to do with what a healthy sitting position is for us. And the reality of that is that the next position is always the best position, because we must not sit in a static position with our calves hanging down from our knees for hours and hours without getting up and moving.
So we've basically been put in this, or sort of primed for the back pain problem by industry, and I imagine sitting in a classroom does the same thing too.
I think it's where it begins. You know, I remember being in, you know, even in elementary school, sitting in those chairs that were absolutely right angle and being massively uncomfortable in those chairs and trying to figure out how I could sit so that it would not be uncomfortable. And that usually involved placing my low back at sort of a triangle to the back of the chair. So there was the seat, the back, and my back, and that made for a kind of a pyramid shape in there. And that was about the only way I could sit in those chairs. And it really never improved from there.
You know, so what do you recommend instead? I mean, walking desks, treadmill desks?
Or? Treadmill desks, if you are quite coordinated, treadmill desks can work, which is not the same, by the way, as a standing desk. A standing desk can be trouble because it's no better for you to stand all day than it is for you to sit all day, because standing is not motion and obviously sitting is not motion. So a treadmill desk in which you're walking for a large part of the day is a great thing. But for me, I tried that. It's impractical for me because I cannot think and walk and type at the same time. I just don't have the coordination. It's as if, you know, I think cognitively I'm not built for it. And I'm not sure how many people are, although I do know that one of the writers I admire greatly, Susan Orlean, can do it. But she's also a marathon runner, so I think there's probably a lot more coordination going on there than I have.
So you're like most of us. I mean, you're a journalist, so a lot of your time is spent at the desk, at the typewriter, at the computer, at typewriter. Boy, I dated myself there. So what do you recommend chair-wise?
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate in that I work at home, or at times I work in a very small private office, so it doesn't matter what I do. And what I do is not something that's accessible to most people who are working in a larger office environment. I have this terrific set of triangular pillows, and I pile them up in such a way that I am sort of slightly reclined against them, although my shoulders are supported. My knees are a little bit higher than my hips, and my legs are supported, and I plop the laptop there, and I work on it. And it's really, really easy on the low back, and I don't have any problems doing that. But it would be no good to sit there like that all day. You know, you'd have the same problems basically with metabolic issues that you would have if you're sitting in a chair all day. So I am blessed to have a dog who feels absolutely compelled to get me up about every 2.5 to 3 hours to do something, whether it's to eat, to walk, to have a drink of water, to amuse himself in some way. And so I know that I'm not going to sit for hours and hours on end in any position. But for people who can, I truly recommend that they find a way to not be sitting on their butts all day long.
So first recommendation is get a dog.
Get a dog. I can't tell you how many people have told me over the course of my research for this book, which I was working on Crooked for about 7 years. So I had plenty of time to talk to lots of people. And many told me that they had recovered when they got their dogs because they started going out and walking a lot more, because you kind of feel mildly foolish out for a walk by yourself. But when you're walking a dog, you have purpose, don't you?
So my plan is because I have to walk my dog also, but my chair's on wheels, so I just attach the dog to the chair. I just keep sitting there and she drags me around.
Well, you keep that up and you'll be in a wheelchair in no time. So just,
all right,
no,
I'll change.
You got to get up and take the dog for a walk. And in addition, you need to be thinking about, what is the rest of your day like? I mean, how much are you planning around getting some exercise? Because to me, it sounds like you're really not, that you think maybe there's a way to get away with this. Maybe somebody else could fix you. You could climb on a table of a chiropractor or a massage therapist or physical therapist, and that's going to get rid of your back pain. But unfortunately, what I have seen is it isn't. There's really nothing that anyone can do to you that will make your back pain go away for good or even lessen it to a point where it's bearable. It really is all about you. And what I've seen over and over again is that sore backs need exercise. You know, there are exceptions. There are people who have been in car accidents. You know, they've fallen off their bicycles. Yeah. They have sore backs. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who've been sort of walking around with back pain for months or years, you know, decades even, and who have not really taken on exercise as a potential solution. I was talking to a trainer today who said that she had a new client come in who has been suffering from back pain for about 10 years and who had told her before they met that she was in pretty decent shape. And she took one look at the client who's about 50, 55, and the client was not in good shape at all, had not been exercising, was in fact going to one Pilates class a week. And that will not take care of this. It really won't.
So you mentioned chiropractic, and in the book you are highly critical, at least skeptical of chiropractic as a practice. I know that I've been to chiropractors long, long time ago. A friend of mine was a chiropractor. And what threw me was not simply what they were doing, whether it helped or not, I have no idea, but the theory behind it and the claims they often made. I mean, one chiropractor told me that if Hitler had his spine adjusted, World War II and the Holocaust would never have happened. That seems a lot to claim for fixing a subluxation. So
yeah, especially if they could locate the subluxation, which, you know, no one has ever been able to show on an X-ray or in any other way that there is such a thing. I mean, there is a medical term, subluxation, but if you have one, you are headed for the emergency room, not the chiropractor. So, yes, it's true that I am critical of traditional what is called straight chiropractors, because their philosophy is such that there's really no scientific basis for what they do. They make extraordinary claims. Lately, they've been calling themselves neurological doctors, which worries me no end, both the neurological part and the doctor part. But I will say that there is an entire new breed of chiropractor out there. And these are people who have given up on their traditional practices, they understand that what they have been doing has no basis and it doesn't work. And they have been retrained and sometimes at length, and they've worked very, very hard to become back pain rehab specialists, which means that now instead of focusing on adjusting people and putting little vials into your hands and, you know, prescribe and ordering all kinds of x-rays, now they are focused on exercise routines and getting people back in shape so that their pain will abate. And many, I think, are really, really good at it. So the only chiropractic that I'm criticizing is the kind that says, come back, you know, once or twice a week for a year. Please sign this contract here saying that you will do that. And, you know, we'll bill your insurance company. And if you don't come back, you know, you're going to experience much more severe damage and you will end up in a wheelchair. And that kind of conversation goes on a lot. There's also types of machines that chiropractors have purchased or leased that are supposed to quote unquote decompress the the discs. Sometimes they say vertebral decompression, sometimes they say disc decompression. But you know what? There's zero evidence for those either. And they're expensive. Well, it costs people a lot of money. A lot of money gets wasted in this area.
Well, we're searching for a cure, except for the obvious, which is exercise, which a lot of us just don't want to do. I'm more like the person you described earlier. I go early in the morning to work out at the gym for an hour to an hour and a half, but then I just sit after that. So that obviously isn't doing me any good. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I have at least half an hour worth of questions on my notepad here. So I want to, if you can talk briefly about the psychotropic aspect of pain relief. You have a section where you talk about not smoking marijuana, but there's what talk of extracting the non-psychotropic ingredient in marijuana and using it in pain relief, but the government doesn't allow the studies to go forward. Am I on the right track with that?
You're pretty much right on track there. So there's definitely a movement afoot. And in California, where I live, it's a very powerful movement to prescribe CBD oil for pain relief. And it shows up in quite a few different types of preparations. There's these drops, it can be put in different foodstuffs. And people do find that they get relief from pain. And the thing that's a little iffy about it is that it doesn't really solve anything. That's the problem. If you stop consuming the CBD oil, you'll be back in pain. You're no better. You've just masked it. Now, I think for some people, okay, well, they're very incapacitated. Maybe we're talking about a veteran who's in a wheelchair, who doesn't have any options, whose options have been eliminated. Okay. But for the rest of us, well, maybe you might want to use that occasionally. But don't you think it would be better to work your way out of the pain rather than to mask the pain? So, you know, I have some reservations about people turning to that. And, you know, there may be a big difference between the outcome in terms of opioid prescription or medical marijuana prescription. We just haven't seen the studies really to show that. We do know that when medical marijuana is legal in a state, the number of opioid prescriptions declines sharply. And that in itself is a good thing. But the end result is kind of the same, which is you have people who are dependent on drugs and who are not any better realistically than they were before they started using medical marijuana for pain relief. So I'm not against it. I really am not. But I think it doesn't solve the problem.
So if there is a solution, it still comes back to moving.
It certainly does. Getting up and moving. It comes back to moving. And one thing that back pain patients tend to ignore is that, you know, they do exercise, but they cheat. They cheat terribly because they do not wish to use the muscles that are bothersome, the parts that hurt. They don't want to use them. So they're extremely good at looking at an exercise and figuring out a way to do something like that, but not use any of the parts of the body that hurt them. And that's not successful. So that's why in Crooked, I have a number of chapters that address different options for rehabilitation, but one of them is called Back Whisperers. And that's why I say that it's absolutely necessary if you have been struggling for, you know, more than a month or a couple of months with this, to find yourself a person. Maybe it's a personal trainer. Maybe it's a physical therapist. It could be a physiatrist, which is a medical specialty. They are MDs who focus on physical medicine and rehabilitation. So when you hear physiatrist, do not think psychiatrist or podiatrist, because it's not the same thing. Find somebody with great spine and back expertise, someone who focuses on the musculoskeletal system, and get the supervision you need so that you are actually doing the exercises properly. Now, I just want to ask you, when you go to the gym, what do you do there?
I start with stretching, then about 10 miles on a stationary bike, and then weightlifting.
Mm-hmm. And stretching, you feel that is, you're doing all that stretching because?
Because I must have read it somewhere that you're supposed to stretch first.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely before you get on a stationary bike for 10 miles, I think it's probably very advisable to stretch. But a lot of back pain patients spend a lot of time stretching and not a lot of time strengthening. So what they get are they get flexible and weak. And you see that over and over again with back pain patients. They say, well, I really work out and I'm very flexible. Well, what they're basically doing is stretching out their ligaments so that their bodies do not have the capacity to support them anymore. And if you, in my book, I talk extensively about the work of a biomechanist by the name of Stuart McGill. And he made the point that, you know, a flexible back is not a strong back, because the back was never meant to be flexible. The joints, the hip joints, the other muscles in the body are meant to be flexible. But the spine, no. The spine needs to be strong and steady and stable. So a lot of this stretching, particularly, you see women, or I suppose men, yes, men too, in yoga classes doing a ton of forward bends. And the only thing that's bending, in fact, is their sacroiliac joints. And this is causing those joints to the ligaments around the joints to become very stretched out, and for the joints to actually slip. And that can cause a tremendous amount of pain. So, if you go on my website, which can be found at cjraymond.com, and you look in the resource section, there's a very, very large set of resources available, all searchable. And you search for the work of Stuart McGill, McGill, you'll see the exercises that are really great for stabilizing and strengthening the muscles around the spine, so that it's not flexible, it's strong, they have endurance, and they can take what you can dish out, and that's so important. So, the free weights that you're doing, that may be very appropriate. You being a guy, you may be lifting too much weight for what your frame can manage, and I haven't seen your frame, and so I do not know.
No, I understand that. I'm an old guy, so I don't think I'm overdoing it anymore. That was another period in my life.
That was a phase, yes.
That was a phase. Yes. There's a point in the book where you're having this meeting over fish and chips, and I'm going, oh yeah, that's what I want, fish and chips. that's
well,
the phase.
Good. I'm glad you found something in there that appealed to you.
that's where I'm at.
Well, that's where, in that part of the book, that's when I'm meeting with Stuart McGill, and he ordered fish and chips. He was, it was not a problem for him. He's a man of well into his 60s and looks great and is very strong fellow, and he gets his fish and chips if he feels like having fish and chips.
Well, good for him. We are going to have to leave it here. Let me just say to the listener that this the book Crooked really is loaded with wisdom about the whole back pain industry, but really about your own back and how to deal with that and stuff about chairs. And there's a lot of material. And if you have this issue, I strongly recommend this book. So my guest today was Catherine Jacobson Raymond. She's the author of Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. A review of the book appears in the May-June issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You can follow Catherine's work on her website, as she just said a moment ago, cjraymond.com. Catherine, thank you so much for speaking with us on Essential Conversations.
It is my pleasure to do so.
Support for this show comes from Flatiron Books, publishers of Real Love, a new book from Sharon Salzberg. Learn to connect more deeply and redefine love with this creative toolkit of mindfulness exercises at sharonsalzberg.com. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Please log in to spiritualityhealth.com to subscribe to the magazine in print or digital formats and download the iTunes app for this podcast. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator and executive producer is Alma Tassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.
Are you ready to ignite your best life and illuminate the world? I'm Stephanie James. I'm a motivational speaker, transformation coach, and psychotherapist. And what lights me up is helping people just like you create the greatest versions of themselves. On my podcast, Igniting the Spark, I will help you ignite your joy and reach new heights in your personal and professional life. Join me for some incredible conversations with authors, spiritual teachers, and other influential thought leaders to help guide you on your way. If you are ready to stop playing small, join me for Igniting the Spark on the mindbodyspirit.fm network or wherever you get your podcasts, and ignite your best life.